This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. Any closing advice you may have for comedians out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I always like to say is just sort of like, there's, like, for comics you love, it wasn't always easy. You know, you sort of have to build your audience, and it's like drops in a bucket. And sometimes you do things and it's more of like a splash. But it takes time, typically. Of course, there's always going to be someone who, like, maybe moves to LA and gets on a show that ends up being huge, and then they get to tour with, you know, like, there's always exceptions to the rule.
Right.
But ideally, it is sort of a long, slower process. And not everybody was laughing at their jokes at first.
Hot breath. Hey, hey, hey. Hot Breath-a-verse, welcome back. It is I, your host, comedian Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot breath. That is right, hot brethren and sistren. Welcome to the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. Every week, I'm on here interviewing the hottest comics in the game. And today's guest, one of my absolute favorite comedians. The fact I even got to sit down with her for the time we had is one of the highlights of this podcast so far. So if you're just tuning in, this is your first one hopping aboard because of our guest. Welcome aboard. If you're a fan of comedy or if you're a comedian yourself, you're going to love this podcast. Welcome to the Hot Breath-a-verse. We appreciate you joining us. Every week's been getting better and better. We've been building and building. I've started posting extra episodes throughout the weeks, whether it's writing exercises or me doing writing sessions with people or me doing a speech somewhere or... It's just all comedy-based. So if you're a comedy nerd or you're a comedian and you just like the fine print of comedy, the process, the craft, this is your spot. This is your podcast. So all that being said, let's jump right into this. The network has been building, and it is thanks to all of you who have not only reached out to me personally, but also shared it with your fellow comedians at open mics or through social media, tagging your friends. And I got to say, we on the way. All right? So this is also going to be on YouTube as well, if you like our YouTube. But best way to share the word, just telling people. Yes, you can subscribe like all other podcasts ask you to do. That does help us get up in the charts higher, but... If you want to help out the podcast or you're a fan of it and you've got something you want to let the world know about, I'm selling ad space on here. Yeah, I just announced it. 2019, we're now selling ad space. Hit me up on social media or on my website, joelbyerscomedy.com, joelbyerscomedy@gmail.com. If you've got a show coming up, you got a festival coming up, you have a service you provide, let's link up. Let's collaborate. And I'll, we can talk in more detail about it. So all that being said, this episode takes place in the green room of the Laughing Skull in between her shows. Comedians usually don't like to do things in between shows, especially like this. But our guest was so generous with her time and insight. And you will be greatly rewarded, hot brethren and sisters. And so here we go. There is only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Beth Stelling.
Have you figured out, because that's an enigma I've asked other comics about too, is like sometimes it only works once. Have you ever been able to figure out like it only worked once, but then you figured it out, like, down the road or anything like that?
I know. I'm trying to think of that. Sometimes it's, like, especially if it's a story, the energy that you have and put behind it, mm-hmm. I think, contributes to, like, the excitement and, yeah, like, basically the energy pouring out of you connects with the crowd because you're just relaying it for the first time. You're not thinking too much. I mean... to get a story really good, you have to do it a bunch of times. And mm-hmm. it's easy to give up on it early if, like, you did it the first time and it was like, that went so well. Because it's just pouring out of you, like, in the way that you ideally as a comic innately know how to tell a story. And then when you go, oh, I should put that into my act, and you try to do it again, and you're like, what were the steps?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no, you can't think too hard about it. But then, of course, if you want it to work, then you really do have to listen and write and just, there's a rugged moment, I think, that you have to push through, which is like, you're teetering on the, I'm specifically thinking of a, it's my
yeah.
Planned Parenthood story, where I told it one time off the, it was like a Dr. Grin's in Grand Rapids. The show had been, it ended up being like a Thursday night show that had a lot of students that it was like a suicide prevention group, and they kind of came out, I think is what it was. It was like a group like that. And so before I went on, and I wasn't really told this, the person who had brought everyone, which of course that's amazing. Like when a big group comes to see a comic and that they like there's, that's wonderful to have a lot of people at your show. And so I understand why she wanted to go up, but she went up like right before me and was, you know, kind of talking about suicide, and it was pretty dark. And so I had to talk about that, because then it was like suicide and now you're headliner.
Yes.
And so like, I was of course like, when is that else? Also happened to me. And so I just talked about the Planned Parenthood story, and it went really well. And I remember the guy who was hosting for me, it was Garrett, he was just basically like, you should tell that again, that was so funny. And I was like, I don't know if I know how. And I struggled with it for months until finally again this summer I tried again, and I was like, I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna put it into the act.
So what does that struggle look like? You actually just trying to replicate it every night type deal?
Yeah. And if you're lazy about it, it's gonna take longer. If you're just believing in the magic of it, like, I'll get it this time or whatever, right. It's still, because it's almost like you want to keep it an amorphous thing so it has life, as opposed to like a very structured word for word thing. I'm still doing that with the Chippendales story. Like, I'm still just, it's not totally nailed down yet. So I've struggled with that too. I just got a new laugh tonight on it. And I'll shut that door or that window.
Of course, yeah.
All the hang-ups.
Hey, of course.
What's up?
What's up, Neil? We're just doing this podcast.
Sorry, did I interrupt?
No. Well, yeah, I mean, what's you did interrupt.
It's Neil Reddy, everyone.
Neil Reddy.
He's popped in. But are you going to stay a teensy?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, it is your favorite thing to do. Okay. Neil's going to come back.
Neil Reddy. Yeah. An Atlanta favorite.
Neil Reddy, everyone. Anyway,
Oh, and that water's for you. That's a gift. That's our
hot breath water.
It's our sponsor.
How could I even drink it? I would like to save it. The coolest water for the hottest podcast. I love it. Anyway, what was it? What's the question?
We were going into storytelling and the struggle. And something when researching you, I heard you say is that you'll improvise, but have like safety nets along the way.
Yeah, along the way. Absolutely.
So how do you kind of incorporate those into the writing process?
You know, I guess there are some comics out there that like have jokes that like maybe are 50%. And so their saves actually end up becoming the funny part. You know, I mean, I'm not even like specifically thinking of someone, but there's comics like that, which can also be its own thing, which is fun. But the safety nets, I would say, is almost like totems within the set. Like, especially right now, it's been almost 2 years, I guess, since I recorded my half hour and it came out. And so I'm got my new hour like pretty close. And so I have basically a framework, you know, just like, or I guess whatever, the fence posts that I know I need to hit. And I'm still figuring out, and I'd like to add tags and make it better and callbacks. And so I basically now have chosen an order that is sort of like my fence posts along the way.
Okay.
And then I can play within them, you know? So if something doesn't go well, it's like, well, I know I have a good joke coming up, but I at least tried something.
It almost gives you the confidence to explore on stage because you know you have something to save it if it's silent for too long.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just in general, I like to have a lot of laugh lines. I mean, I know that seems pretty obvious, but ideally you have... I I don't like to go that long without having a laugh line.
Rough. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty good, you know, speaks for itself. Like most comedians want to get laughs.
But sometimes comedians will call it, they'll like style. Like it's not really funny, but it's like cool or whatever. And you're like, well, this should still be funny. Like,
yeah. I mean, for a long time, I was also just dark and not exactly funny yet, you know. And sometimes still, if people don't get me or they didn't get my style, there'll be times where it happens less rare, but like even tonight there was a woman in the front row who you could tell was probably meant to be there. But I think it was during one joke where she was like, oh, which, you know, of course, like to me is cringe. Like that's the last thing I want to hear. That's not the reason I'm telling you this.
Right.
You know, ideally the joke is to make you laugh about something that was not great, you know? Mm-hmm. So when they take it the wrong way or too sensitive for you, it's like, no, that's not what I wanted, you know? And so I think for the longest time, it really was more dark and not funny enough. And so I've tried to master that as the years go on, being able to make it funny enough, but also dark.
Do you almost find, though, how you're saying the dark thing can affect the reaction of it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I almost get annoyed with, like, if I'm not enthusiastic and I say a joke that usually works, then it won't work.
Yes.
So it's almost like how you're saying it is almost as important as what you're saying.
Absolutely. Do you find that? Yeah, no, I think so, too. I sometimes will play with it, especially if I'm, oddly, I've been dealing with this weird thing lately where sometimes, like, I'm having trouble catching my breath on stage, which actually has never really happened to me. And I begin to wonder, I'm like, is it allergy? Am I getting older and I'm having allergies or something in the certain places that I'm traveling to? I can't totally figure it out, but like, I am fine with being slow, but I think as the years go on, my pacing has gotten quicker, I guess. I mean, I've changed as a comic since I've started.
Right.
I think maybe more to myself, I feel very different than maybe to an onlooker, but even if you watch like my first Conan set from whatever it is, 6 years ago, I obviously think I'm very different from then.
Oh, yeah.
But it's one of those things where you just don't realize, like, obviously as a human, you're going to change. And then it goes with your comedy as well. So I feel like the way I'm saying things now is maybe more closer to my personality as opposed to how I started, which was more deadpan. And so sometimes when I go deadpan because I'm tired or if I can't...
Trifling.
Well, you also get some background chatter of the great. Laughing school.
It's the Laughing School green room.
Yeah, that's where we are. It was because of me that we're in here.
I appreciate your time. Oh, my gosh. You're Beth Stelling.
That's very sweet.
You're a killer.
Well, thank you. Like, thanks for coming to the show.
That's what the main thing I was so curious about diving into was the writing side. Because you have the stand-up experience, but then also, I mean, the TV writing. And writing for so many series. That's a world that I don't have much experience with, but the people I've talked to, they almost make it seem like, I mean, it's cool you're a writer, but they're like, but you work. Mm-hmm. You're like there, you're like all day.
Yeah,
there.
And it definitely will affect your stand-up, of course.
That's what I've heard,
if you're there all day, it's tough to want to get up at night, and really you're sort of... brain is fried by the end of the day. You sort of have what I've talked about with other comics, just like decision fatigue. You know, as you sit in the room, you're deciding whether to talk, whether to not talk, you know, what joke to pitch, whether it's good enough. You're doing a lot of like mental work. I mean, it seems so silly because essentially so many people want to write for TV and it is a coveted job. So then to get there and be like, I'm tired or complain, it feels crazy. You know, so you don't want to be like, man, my writing job is tough, because it really is a coveted position, and it is an honor to be able to work and, you know, do all those things. And of course, I you know, you work hard for them. But the point is, it is exhausting, you know, sitting at a computer is so tough on your eyes. And so it's just like, it seems like such a stupid thing to complain about, but you kind of have to take care of yourself, relax, rest your eyes, get good sleep. Because it's your main job, and thankfully stand-up is always kind of there and I can go back to it. But I usually start, like, when I was writing on Crashing in New York, we would move there and continue the writing process from LA for about a month, and then we would shoot for 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
And so I would be there, and I would do a lot of sets initially. And then as time wears on, our shoot days are 12 hours. And so sometimes if we were shooting over by the Cellar or Village Underground, it's like I could pop over and sneak away. But you also don't want to get caught, like, can I get alts for this? And I'm like, where's Beth? You know what I mean? It's like, she's on stage. So the benefit was being close. You can just hop on a train in New York, but also you kind of would have to ask permission to leave. And because this show's about stand up, the beauty of that was oftentimes they're very lenient. You know, they could say, yeah, you'll do it. Because you might get a story out of it or perspective or something to add to the show.
And what are alts?
Like alternative jokes to what was written in the script.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so basically, or like similarly to if you're doing punch up, you know, on a movie or something, it'll be like, it's written, but can we beat it, you know, on the spot? Or if they improvise something, can you add to it? Or
and you'll have,
or if the scene's not working,
oh,
then on the spot you would go away and rewrite it.
Oh, and just kind of spitball it right there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And then on top of it, anytime, typically with Judd, there's a lot of improv that's going on.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very collaborative in that sense, mm-hmm. It seems.
Yeah, so it might just be like, sometimes he's even just kind of yelling things out for the actor. I mean, not in an aggressive way. It's in a microphone, you know? Or
Yeah.
But yeah, sort of like just tossing things out of there.
And you went from year one on Crashing, staff writer, to then year two, you're like executive story editor?
Yeah, the way that writing works typically is like your deal is sort of worked out when you were brought on, you know? So in your deal, your agents have worked out if you bring her back for season two, she'll, you know, receive a higher credit. And if I went further on, I would have increased each time. You know, that's kind of like the setup of the whole gig, essentially. Your agents are supposed to sort of look out for you in that way.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I did not go back for season three. I took some other writing opportunities and, you know, I kind of wanted to go in different directions.
Yeah.
And so it gave me experience in writing for like a Hilarity for Charity, Seth Rogen's Netflix special, and a pilot for David Spade for Comedy Central, and then Punch Up on that movie this summer in Vancouver that'll be out this July. It's called Good Boys. So I really got to bounce around and try several different things as opposed to just TV writing, which I am grateful. I learned a lot, you know, from Crashing and from Judd and being on that show.
Yeah, what did you learn?
Like, basically, when I first got the job, of course, it was life-changing. I remember where I was. I was just, like, outside this bike shop. I had just done this meeting at, you take a lot of meetings in LA, typically, especially when you're first going. You're just sort of trying to get your face out there and meet people who you might click with and work with in the future or whatever. But Electric something, I think it's Jack Black's company. And I came downstairs and I was, like, near this bike shop and I got the call. And my managers were just like, hey, Judd Apatow just called and asked if you wanted to write for Crashing. And I was like, yes. You know, I do. And I just remember like, this is incredible. You know, like my life will change because of this, because it's very difficult to get a writing job. And, you know, I had done a couple, Judd at that time, he had seen me out a lot because he was starting to get back into stand up. And so as we saw, his special came out last Christmas mm-hmm. time. That's what he was working towards. But like, that's why his reinvestment in stand-up and Pete's show and all of that inspired him to start doing stand-up again. I'm sure among other things, but from my viewpoint in talking with him. So he saw him, he was out on the scene getting back into it. And he saw me and I had been on the Pete Holmes show and I knew Pete. And so when it came to hiring writers, they thought of me and I went in to write for it.
So what does a typical day look like on the writing job?
You get in, you have coffee.
What time?
Usually around 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reasonable hour.
Yeah, sometimes we would start early. And then you already start thinking about lunch. It's a lot of ordering food. It's a lot of ordering food and coffee. But yeah, I mean, the ideal early processes are what the early stages, I should say, are like what they would call like blue sky. So you're just sort of pitching things out in a sort of brainstormy way, sharing stories and stuff where the show could go, you know, from your own life and, you know, just commiserating, but also sharing group experience. And a lot of us have been to the same comedy clubs. And so we know the owners, we share our different stories about that owner, you know, and all the things that could happen. And there's a writer's assistant in the room who usually that person wants to be a writer. And they work extremely hard and they're paid the least. And, you know, they do a lot of work because they're organizing everybody's thoughts and taking them down in real time.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. The writer's assistant is a very, very tough job. I think they're somewhat hard to get. And like I said, they work so hard and they're paid the least. And so they're there taking everything down. And then those notes will go out and you can, you know, review them over overnight if you want, and the next day come in. And as weeks go on in the early stages, you're sort of trying to map out the season, you know, episodes, whatever, how many episodes your show is, but mm-hmm. for us, 1 through 8, and sort of the arc of the season and the characters and all of those things, they start to take form as the weeks go on, and we sort of lock things in. And Judd would pop. He's not there every single day, but he'd sort of pop in. Sorry, it's so loud.
No, you're cool. Okay. These mics will pick up mainly
oh,
us.
Oh, good,
anyway.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. this is calm. This is the grind right here.
I know. Everybody's out in the other room yelling. But Judd would sort of come in and basically sort of shape or hone in on the ideas, or basically share his expertise. Like, here's where I think this should go.
Wow.
And sometimes we'd be going off on a tangent for a long time, and if he didn't pop in for a while, he could come in and be like, no, he would never be like, no, you know, he's not like that. He would just be like, what if it goes in this direction? Or I think the series, like for season one, I remember he's like, what if it ends with Leaf and Pete in a bed together? And then so we would have to sort of find our way to that.
Oh.
Even if that's not where we were going at all. So
interesting.
Yeah, he's the executive producer, so he has pretty much the final say.
It's almost like one of those tent poles, though.
Yeah.
Like you said, like with your stand-up, it's
yeah,
almost like
here's where we need to get.
The destination.
Yeah, he had a vision for how he wanted the season to end, and how we were going to get there was the task.
And how many hours a day is this?
Usually, it depends on your showrunner, like their style. And, you know, sometimes if they feel like, well, you're exhausted, we've exhausted our minds today, you can go home.
Mm-hmm.
It depends, but, you know, there are shows I know for a fact you hear these stories about, like, the New Girl Room was really long. They would be there sometimes overnight, you know, or stay till 11 or midnight. And with Crashing, it was typically like 9 or 10 to 6-ish, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. So, like, decent hours, sometimes earlier, sometimes later.
I've heard Pete say in interviews with Crashing specifically and writing it that he felt like if what they were talking about didn't make him uncomfortable or didn't mm-hmm. feel too personal to share,
mm-hmm.
then it almost wasn't worth keeping.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find the same with your material or things that you write as well? Or did you find that in the show? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like your desire obviously is to connect with people. I mean, my desire is to connect with people first and foremost, but in my own very unique way. And so, I mean, I'm not calling myself very unique, but I'm saying ideally I'm connecting with them in a unique way. You mm-hmm. know, I don't want it to be, I like the specificity of things, you know? And so my favorite things early on in stand-up were when I would see a comic talking about something very, very specific, and me knowing exactly what they were talking about, it just made me laugh so hard. And that was my favorite thing about it. Mm. Is like, how could they? And those are the moments where you're like, man, I wish I thought of that. Those times where you see jokes that you're basically jealous of because you're like, that's so good. Why didn't I? So really all you're trying to do is just get that unique perspective on topics that really a lot of people can relate to, you know? And then again, not everyone is going to like you. And I think that's probably a good thing in my opinion. It hurts a little because a lot of us are, you know, either star for attention or we're in this for a reason because we need that like sort of love from the outside. So it can hurt a little if not everybody likes what you do. But I think in general, it's probably, I would prefer having a specific group of people than everyone.
Do you think that's helped you to find your voice as well? Like you said,
yeah,
being
I mean,
comfortable.
Right. I don't like, I guess I would be fooling myself to say that I don't love creating some tension, you know. I think I do. I think too, for a long time it was one of those things where it's like you don't want to stir things up or whatever, or have like a super strong opinion because you want to be liked. And
mm-hmm.
that was obviously a theme for me as a kid, as like a little performer and attention seeker. Like I wanted to be liked, and obviously I still have that in me as a stand-up, you know. I enjoy getting laughs. But now I think I have more of a desire to say what's on my mind or make a sort of statement or a point or share my perspective on it, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe open up somebody else's mind to it.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily want to be like, you know, I'm not a super political comic. I'm not, or at least I don't see myself that way. But I would like to open up somebody's eyes to a different perspective.
It seems like the power with walking that line is like in the writing and how you kind of navigate those waters.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
When you're developing stand-up, what is that process? I've heard you say it. Sometimes it's papers on a table. Sometimes it's like note cards or sticky notes on the wall.
Yeah, I usually what does that look like a one. You know, I used to, when I first started, write out jokes, you know, word for word.
Verbatim, okay.
Yeah, type them in to my computer. I don't do that anymore, mostly because it's just they sort of seem to disappear in my computer. In my notes, I have a ton of ideas, and I'll have to go through them sometimes, and then they're everywhere. They're paper. They're in my notes on my phone, and sometimes I have to go through and, like, I'll summarize them into a group in my notebook and be like, these are all new ideas you should go through. I mean, I've tried to adapt this mantra in my head where if I have a day off or whatever, or many days off where I don't really have a show or a headlining weekend or something, I'm like, there's always work to be done.
Yeah.
And I sometimes I'm just like, I don't have anything to do. But there's so much work that can be done on stand-up for you to be really good. And it's easier to just get by with a joke that works than to make it perfect. And then again, of course, there's you can do that too much. You know, you don't want to be a perfectionist and never, you know, finish a joke or make it too perfect. You know, there's obviously middle ground and balance on anything. But now I sort of do one word, or sometimes I'll take a voice memo. Yeah. But it's usually like an idea in my head, and I just have to try it on stage. And at this point, I've grown comfortable enough on stage that I find it a luxury to just be able to, you know, try jokes within a headlining set, which of course hasn't always been the case.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes have to show up and just really deliver because you're not as known, or you don't know if you'll be invited back, you know, as an early headliner. Uh-huh. So you can't just like try shit out and throw it against the wall. But I do that now, which I have fun with, you know, like I said, I can just like play between things, but, it's usually a one word on a note card for a joke and an order that I have going on my wall. It's hard to be, what's it called? Subjective of your own things, you know, is that the word? I always get objective and subjective confused. Subject is specific, object.
Yeah, subjective is like is, taking out the context.
Yeah, so it's hard to be objective about your act.
So you're like saying you see
can
your
I phone
act
a friend?
And it's hard kidding.
I don't know if I was I really hunching over here in this video the whole time?
Oh, I don't know. This is definitely green room cell phone video here.
And also, I'm sure the lighting is a little spooky.
The down light is just giving us nice shadows.
I know, the lighting is... This is probably better. But anyway...
You get tight, you get in your own head about your material?
Well, it's hard to just say, like, yeah, I mean, that's why it's helpful when you have someone you trust to watch and say, like, whatever, say you had a joke on hoodies or something. You talk everything about, I'm just saying it because we're both wearing them.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about the color and you talk about the zipper and you talk about everything. And I'm like, dude, what about the strings? And you go, whoa.
Uh-huh.
And obviously that's so simple, but you just needed somebody else on the outside to be like, you're not even talking about the strings. And they're like, holy shit, I wasn't even thinking of that. So it's like sometimes you take somebody else's creative mind to see a different angle on it that you just, for whatever reason, cannot see.
Yes.
And I was a lone wolf for a really long time. So I think I have the TV writing stuff to thank for making me be more collaborative. But yeah, I mean, stand up is, there's this pride in the fact that you do it alone. And I, you know, I write all my own jokes and they're all true stories from my life. And so I think that's probably apparent, although some people have been like, is that real? You know, and I'm like, yeah, it's strange, but it's real. That's my life, my childhood. So, but now I'm more open to at least someone saying, well, what if you know, like I ask, you never want to really like go up to a comic and be like, here's my note. You know, you want to go with somebody you trust and like specifically ask them, but they can help you sort of see something you might not see, you know, I've just been toying. I mean, I'm in the South right now, but I've been toying with moving some things around in my set that are more progressive. But the truth is if I film or, you know, tape my next special and keep it at the top where I would like it to be, where I'll do it, it will be ideally a grouping of my fans and they'll be more on the progressive side. And so it will be received well.
Of course.
So there's a lot of factors that go into stand up, you know, where you are, you know, whether or not the people that have come out to see you are already fans or if they just came to see a comedy show,
mm-hmm.
you know. There's a lot of factors.
Something that's tough for comedians is to know, like, when to just let go of the joke. Because it's like, how many times will you try a joke before you're like, okay, I tried it in this hipster bar. I tried it in this restaurant. I tried it in this comedy club. And like, it worked here, but not here, here. Like, how do you know when it's like, all right, it's dead.
I know. It's tough. It's weird. Sometimes I hold on to it for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it doesn't work, because it works enough times and I like it.
Right.
It's hard. It was something I learned, I think, from a college professor where it was like, it's called killing your babies,
mm-hmm.
where you just have to, you can't keep everything so precious. You know, you just sort of have to say, I'm going to have to let this one go.
Yeah, there's more.
It's interesting that was the expression that he used. But anyway.
Yeah, I've heard that before too.
You have?
Yeah, I've heard that expression.
I love
how
like that's okay, but everybody's real pissed about abortion.
Oh, you're still in the Planned Parenthood joke mindset? Yeah.
But anyway,
it's just cool. You're able to hide great writing with a casual delivery. We have 4 minutes.
Yeah, I love you. Okay, all right, wait for me to eat that. Hold on.
Wait for me. Sweet Beth wants the dessert.
That's arrived.
Dun, 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 dun. I know, but you lost a tooth for. I saw your Modern Comedian.
Oh, where, yeah, with all and I'm the missing a tooth now. That. One of my sugar teeth is missing. I'm getting an implant on Monday. Tooth implant.
So you're going to have it for the special and all that?
I won't. I think it takes like 6 months.
Oh, really?
I don't really have a date right now that I've set for recording it anyway. So I just. But going back to that, it's almost like that's another thing. It's like when you record it, then that's your end time. I mean, obviously you can still tell jokes that you like from that. I think the idea of killing everything you've ever written, you know, is not great. But when you're ready to record an hour, you're typically building to weed out all old things. Whereas in between specials, you can have fun mixing from old if you want, because people come out to see you that like your old stuff. And if you want, I like to mix things in. But I can't really do that right now because I need to get in the practice of doing all the new stuff.
Yeah.
That being said, I still gravitate or towards certain subjects or what am I trying to say, sort of hover around certain topics that I just always kind of talk about, you know, so there's similar joke areas but different new jokes.
Yeah, and you're better at writing and inserting your point of view,
yeah,
as opposed to maybe your first Conan set, like you said.
Right Yeah,
which is a great set.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I think I don't want to be the person that looks back and like hates all my old stuff, but it is tough to love it because you have changed and you like to think that you're better. And I think that comedy people love to go so hard on things, you know, like with their opinion, whether it's good or it's not good. And I get the nature of that. I do. But it's just it is fun. And I'm thankful to have those older things online into what I have now, just because it's like. Yeah, people change.
Of course.
Well, it's interesting that our country in a lot of ways is so obsessed with change or not change. I mean, I'm not political, but this just comes to mind. As a comic, I'm a political person and care about politics and I vote.
Mm-hmm.
And but the point is, like, remember when that, I don't know how old you are, but it was like John Kerry essentially lost an election based off of the idea that he was a flip-flopper. Okay? Like, it was like, he flip-flops on things. And it's like, I hope so. You know, like Hillary. Hillary used to also not totally support, I think, gay rights. And since she's changed, it's like it's very odd. As a country, we don't love change. I get if someone is like lying to your face and doing something else. But yeah, I think change. That's just sorry. I just went off on a tangent.
No,
but it's like we're oddly obsessed with you have to stick to your guns. And it's like we should all be trying to constantly change and grow. And so. I don't know where I went off on that.
But
even thinking
in the big swings of like a comedy career and like the highs and lows, like you record your first album the night before your notebooks get stolen and then you record an album and then you get booked for Conan like that week as well. So do you find in your career that it's almost like the lower the lows, there's always a high to kind of bring
you
out of it?
I guess that has happened.
That has happened throughout your career?
Absolutely. And I remember feeling about like maybe I wanted to stop. And then I got the Chicago Reader's like best comic of Chicago thing. Truly like the next, my friend was like, look, go pick up a Chicago Reader.
Crazy.
And I was like, what? And you know, And then, like you said, like the notebooks getting stolen and then me being have to, like, you know, forced to sort of trust myself and my memory. And of course, I look back at that album and I don't love it. And I think, like, why did I put that out? There was no reason for it. You know what I mean? Like, you have these things in your head where you're like, I have to put out an album. And
right,
it's sort
milestones.
Of like, yeah. But then again, going back to what I said earlier, it's like you also don't want to never put one out.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a balance to everything. It's just, and it's out there. And I know some people have enjoyed it, but it's tough for me to listen to.
Well, thanks for doing this.
We have
hit the 30-minute mark. And before we get out of here, you know, a lot of comedians listen to this. Is there anything else you want the world to know, or like any closing advice you may have for comedians out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I always like to say is just sort of like there's... like for comics you love, it wasn't always easy. You know, you sort of have to build your audience and it's like drops in a bucket. And sometimes you do things and it's more of like a splash. But it takes time typically. Of course, there's always going to be someone who like maybe moves to LA and gets on a show that ends up being huge and then they get to tour. You know, like there's always exceptions to the rule.
Right.
But ideally, it is sort of a long, slower process. And not everybody was laughing at their jokes at first, you know, it's like you have to, it takes time. And as long as you're staying true to yourself and doing what you think is funny, you're probably going to have fun and enjoy yourself.
Boom.
Yeah.
All right. Beth Stelling, thanks for being on Hot Breath.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me. I was borderline distracted at times. Neil, you can enter.
All right. There you go, Hot Brethren and Sister. And before you go, one quick exciting piece of news. If you are listening to this the week of the release, I am hosting my live game show, Comedy the Game Show, Saturday, January 26th at the Laughing Skull Lounge, 5 p.m. right here in Atlanta, Georgia. Or if you're listening to this after, this is a monthly show. The last Saturday of every month, we're out there hosting. So you can keep up with my schedule. JoelByersComedy.com. Keep up with Hot Breath and all we're doing here. If you did find this valuable, if you learned from this episode, all I ask, just share the knowledge. That's all I ask. Just, many of you have reached out saying, hey, I was at an open mic. I told my comedian friends about this. Now they're on board. If you're on another podcast, on Dusty Slay's recent podcast with Aaron Weber, they were talking about Hot Breath. However you can get it out there, that's all we need at this point. We're building the community first, and everyone else will follow us. So congratulations and thank you for being a part of still the early stages. Even though we're in the 160s on the number of episodes, still the early stages. So thank you for being a part of this community. If you want to, you know, show your community pride, we've got some Hot Breath merch for sale that's linked in the show notes. You know, we got hoodies and t-shirts and socks and stickers, just all representing the Hot Breathiverse. And I appreciate you. Remember, if you want to collaborate, maybe sponsor an episode or two or three, message me on social media, at Hot Breath Pod, at Joel Byers Comedy, linked in the show notes. Let's connect. Even if you don't even, you know, just connect. Ask. What's the harm in that? So... all that being said, I'm very excited for what we have coming up in the episodes in the future, and I cannot thank you enough for your support and the messages you send me about, hey, this episode was right on time. Thank you so much. Oh, man, that Type 5 podcast you did about competitions was on fleek. You know, so many people have reached out just saying, I needed to hear this at this time. So if you needed to hear it, chances are you're not alone. So sharing it with other comedians, other comedy fans, comedy nerds, it really does go a long way, and it really does make a difference. So all that being said, let's get out of here. Thank you to my wife, Erin Byers, for making the theme song. And thank to you for listening. And I also meant to say, Andrew Barrow was the Hot Brethren who reached out saying, hey, man, that episode about competitions was just what I needed to hear. So I hope this one helped you out as well. If you enjoyed it, let Beth know. Last week's guest, Alton Walker, was blown away, or 2 weeks ago, at all of you that reached out to him saying how much that episode helped him. If you thought Beth was helpful and insightful, message her, let her know, hey, your episode on Hot Breath was amazing. That, my hot brother and sister, is how we make a wave and an impact in this comedy game. Connect with the comedians I interview on here. Let them know, hey, even if it's a past episode, just let them know, the episode you did on Hot Breath was amazing. That causes a chain reaction, I promise. So thanks for out there doing the grassroots rave, baby. We're not doing it the easy way, but we're doing it the right way. So thank you for being a part of us still in these building stages. And hey, until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.